History of Sprinkling. Having seen that primitive Christians practiced immersion only as baptism, we come now to inquire for the origin of sprinkling and pouring. The first case known to us is that of novation in the year 251 A.D., an allusion to which we have given by Wall as follows. Quote, "Novation was by one party of the clergy and people of Rome chosen bishop of that church, in a schismatical way, and in opposition to Cornelius, who had been chosen by the major part and was already ordained. Cornelius does, in a letter to Fabius, bishop of Antioch, vindicate his right, and shows that novation came not canonically to his orders of priesthood. Much less was he capable of being chosen bishop, for that all the clergy and a great many of the laity were against his being ordained presbyter, because it was not lawful, they said, for any one that had been baptized in his bed in time of sickness, as he had been, to be admitted to any office of the clergy." Unquote. Wall's History of Infant Baptism, Volume 2, pages 385 and 386. Mosheim, in his Historical Commentaries, page 62, Volume 1, gives us the history of the baptism of novation. He says, quote, "He was seized with a threatening disease and was baptized in his bed when apparently about to die." Unquote. He recovered from his sickness and was subsequently made a presbyter in the church by Bishop Fabian, contrary to the whole body of priests and of a large part of the church. The author says, quote, "It was altogether irregular and contrary to ecclesiastical rules to admit a man to priestly office who had been baptized in bed, that is, who had been merely sprinkled and had not been wholly immersed in water in the ancient world. For by many, and especially the Roman Christians, the baptism of clinici, so they called those who, lest they should die out of the church, were baptized on a sick bed, was accounted less perfect, and indeed less valid, and not sufficient for the attainment of salvation." Unquote. Louisville Debate, pages 439 and 440. The reader will please observe that the objection made to the ordination of novation was that he had been merely sprinkled, in the language of the author, and not wholly immersed in water in the ancient method, thus showing clearly that immersion was the ancient method. From this time, sprinkling and pouring as baptism seem to have been practiced, but only upon persons dangerously ill. Much discussion of its validity ensued until about 80 years afterward the question was laid before the Neo-Caesarian Council, the 12th canon of which is, quote, "He that is baptized when he is sick ought not to be made priest, for his coming to the faith is not voluntary, but from necessity, unless his diligence and faith do afterward prove commendable, or the scarcity of men fit for the office requires it." Unquote. Wall's History, Volume 2, pages 386 and 387. On the validity of this baptism, Bishop Cyprian remarks, "The breast of the believer is washed, the soul of the man is cleansed by the merits of faith. In the sacraments of salvation, where necessity compels and God gives his permission, the divine thing, though outwardly abridged, bestows all that implies on the faithful." Unquote. Neander's Church History, Volume 1, page 310. Observe here that while Cyprian held that clinic baptism secured the blessings implied in the rite, he acknowledges it to be an outward abridgment of the divine thing. Who has a right to abridge divine things? Quote, "The first general law for sprinkling was obtained in the following manner. Pope Stephen II, being driven from Rome by Adolphus, king of the Lombards, in 753, fled to Pippin, who, a short time before, had usurped the crown of France. Whilst he remained there, the monks of Crecy, in Brittany, consulted him whether, in case of necessity, baptism poured on the head of the infant would be lawful. Stephen replied that it would. But though the fruits of this fact be allowed, which, however, some Catholics deny, yet pouring or sprinkling was admitted only in cases of necessity. It was not till the year 1311 that the legislature, in a council held in Ravenna, declared immersion or sprinkling to be indifferent. In Scotland, however, sprinkling was never practiced in ordinary cases till after the Reformation, about the middle of the 16th century. From Scotland it made its way into England in the reign of Elizabeth, but was not authorized in the established church." Unquote. Edinburgh Encyclopedia, Article Baptism. It has been insisted that sprinkling or pouring was first practiced in cold countries, but Dr. Wall says, by history it appears that the cold climate held the custom of dipping as long as any. For England, which is one of the coldest, was one of the latest that admitted this alteration of the ordinary way. Vasquez, having said that it was the old custom both in the East and the West to baptize both grown persons and infants that were in health by immersion, and that it plainly appears by the words of St. Gregory that the custom continued to be so in his time. I will here endeavor to trace the times when it began to be left off in the several countries in the West, meaning still in the case of infants that were in health and in the public baptism. For in the case of sickly or weak infants, there was always, in all countries, an allowance of effusion or sprinkling to be given in haste and in the house or any other place. France seems to have been the first country in the world where baptism by effusion was used ordinarily to persons in health and in the public way of administering it. It came more and more into request in that country till, in Bonaventure's time, it was become, as appears by his words last quoted, as ordinary practice. And though he says some other churches did then so use it, yet he names none but France. The Synod of Algiers, in 1275, speaks of dipping or pouring as indifferently used, and blames some ignorant priests for that they dip or pour the water but once, and instructs them that the general custom of the church is to dip thrice, or pour on water three times. From France it spread, but not till a good while afterward, into Italy, Germany, Spain, etc., and last of all into England. In England there seem to have been some priests so early as the year 816 that attempted to bring in the use of baptism by effusion in the public administration, for Spelman recites a canon of a council in that year. Quote, "Let the priests know that when they administer holy baptism they must not pour the water on the head of the infants, but they must always be dipped in the font." Unquote. Wall's History, Volume 2, pages 292 to 296. On page 397, Dr. Wall quotes Wycliffe thus, quote, "And the church has ordained that in case of necessity any person that is fidel, or that is himself baptized, may give baptism, etc. Nor is it material whether they be dipped," unquote, etc. By this quotation from Wycliffe, it will be seen that the church ordained the departure from the ancient custom by making it immaterial whether the subject was dipped, etc. On page 398, Dr. Wall says, "From the time of King Edward, Mr. Walker, who has taken the most pains in tracing this matter, derives the beginning of the alteration of the general custom. He says that dipping was at this time the more usual, but sprinkling was sometimes used, which, within the time of half a century, meaning from 1550 to 1600, prevailed to be the more general, as it is now almost the only way of baptizing." We call the reader's attention to the beginning of the alteration of the general custom. We might quote numerous other extracts from Dr. Wall showing that the primitive practice was dipping or immersion, and that the church, through her councils, popes, and bishops, has assumed the right to change it, but the amount of testimony we wish to present from other sources forbids further quotations from him. Dr. Kendrick, Archbishop of the Catholic Church in Baltimore, says, "When religion had consummated her triumphs over paganism in the various countries of Europe, the custom of Christians baptizing children became universal. Ages passed away almost without an instance of the baptism of adults. Hence the necessity of receding from the mode of immersion became still more frequent, since the tender infant oftentimes could not be immersed without peril to its life. The cases thus multiplying, the more solemn method fell gradually into disuse until it was in most places entirely superseded. Another cause contributed to favor effusion. A class of females formerly existed in the church under the name of deaconesses who, among other exercises of piety, instructed and prepared for baptism the catechumens of their sex, and performed some of the ceremonies preparatory to its administration. This class of females having ceased from a variety of causes, it became expedient to abstain from the immersion of females." Kendrick on Baptism, pages 172 and 173. And on page 174 he says, The change of discipline which has taken place in regard to baptism should not surprise us. For although the Church is but the dispenser of the sacraments which her divine spouse instituted, she rightfully exercises a discretionary power as to the manner of their administration. She cannot change their substance. Again, on the same page, he says, "The Church wisely sanctioned that which, although less solemn, is equally effectual. The power of binding and loosing which she received from Christ warrants this exercise of governing wisdom that, the difference of times and places being considered, condensation may be used with regard to the mode of administering the sacraments without danger to their integrity." Dr. Johnson said, "As to giving the bread to the laity, they may think that, in what is merely ritual, deviations from the primitive mode may be admitted on the ground of convenience. And I think they are as well warranted to make this alteration as we are to substitute sprinkling in the room of ancient baptism." Campbell, Debate with Rice, page 173. Mr. Bonner says, "Baptism by immersion was undoubtedly the apostolic practice and was never dispensed with by the Church except in cases of sickness or when a sufficient quantity of water could not be had. In both these cases, baptism by aspersion or sprinkling was allowed, but in no other." Booth on Baptism, page 176. Chamieris, "Immersion of the whole body was used from the beginning, which expresses the force of the word baptizo, whence John baptized in the river. It was afterward changed into sprinkling, though it is uncertain when or by whom it commenced." Ibid, page 192. Bishop Stillingfleet's Rites and Customs of the English Church. "Rites and customs apostolical are altered. Therefore men do not think that apostolical practice doth bind, for if it did, there could be no alteration of things agreeable thereto. Now, let any one consider but these few particulars, and judge how far the pleaders for a divine rite of apostolical practice do look upon themselves as bound now to observe them, as above." De Lingius, "It is manifest that while the apostles lived, the ordinance of baptism was administered not out of a vessel or a baptistry, which are the marks of later times, but out of rivers and pools, and that not by sprinkling, but by immersion. So long as the apostles lived, as many believe, immersion only was used, to which afterward perhaps they added a kind of pouring." Ibid, page 194. Heideggerus, "Plunging or immersing was most commonly used by John the Baptist and the apostles. It is of no importance whether baptism be performed by immersion into water, as of old, in the warm eastern countries, and even at this day, or by sprinkling, which was afterward introduced in colder climates, as above." Edward Lee, "The ceremony used in baptism is either dipping or sprinkling. Dipping is the more ancient. At first they went down into the rivers. Afterward they were dipped in fonts. Zanchius and Mr. Perkins prefer, in persons of age and in hot countries where it may be safe, the ceremony of immersion under water, as holding more analogy to that of Paul." Romans 6 and verse 4, as above.